Yeah, here we come, baby. Here we come. Here come the Jets, babe.
Yeah, that's right, folks. Here we come. Here we come. Here come the New York Jets. And welcome, everybody, to another episode of Jet Nation Radio. This is Dennis Agapito. And, of course, as you know, this is an interactive show. So you can join in the conversation on Twitter. It's at Jet Nation Radio. We are going to have the phones turned off for a little while. A little bit later in the show, they'll be on. We do have a wonderful interview set up that we had to tape last night, Tyson and myself, because it's with Scott Wright from DraftCountdown.com. A little bit of a scheduling conflict, so we taped it last night. We're going to play that in a few minutes, but I do want to say hello to my good friend and colleague, Tyson Rausch. So, Tyson, how are you tonight?
Dennis, I'm doing great, and I'm looking forward to this interview, like listening back to it, because for all listeners out there, I mean, Scott Wright is like an encyclopedia when it comes to the draft. I mean, he gave us tremendous insight on the Jets, prospects, draft strategies. I mean, you could not ask for a better interview, and I'm really excited to share it with everybody.
Yeah, you know, I think not only is it just wonderful insight onto the prospects, it's also the philosophies. He knows, he understands the Jets systems, Marty Morningwig, Rex Ryan, what they're looking for in offense, defense, where certain positions might be valued more than others in later rounds. So, you know, without further ado, I'm going to play the interview that we did with Scott last night. Again, it's draftcountdown.com on the internet. It is on Twitter at draftcountdown. Now, if you want to join the conversation, it's at Jet Nation Radio during the interview, and we will be opening the phone lines after the interview is over. So here is Scott.
Good evening, Jet Nation, and welcome to a special broadcast. We're very fortunate to have a wonderful guest on tonight to discuss the draft, and it is Scott Wright from DraftCountdown.com. Let me just give you a little information about Scott. Not only does he have the website, which is fantastic, draftcountdown.com, it goes over soup to nuts every single prospect in the draft through the entire year. There's mock drafts. There's analysis of players. There's big boards. Anything that you can think of regarding the draft is on this site. I highly recommend that you visit it all year long. It provides you with anything that you need about the upcoming draft. And it also has one of my favorite things, which is a clock that actually counts down until the draft starts and then restarts itself again when the draft ends and counts down to the next draft. It's really a fantastic thing. Also, Scott has a show here on Blog Talk Radio. Just search Draft Countdown. You can also follow him on Twitter. It's at Draft Countdown. So, Scott, Dennis Agapito and Tyson Rausch with Jet Nation Radio, we really appreciate you coming on, giving us some of your insight on the upcoming draft.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, and thanks for that intro. That was awesome.
Oh, well, like I said, I've been going to Draft Countdown for years, and it's a wonderful site. It's got great information, and if you're a draft junkie, it's a must-read. But why don't we kind of jump right into it? Obviously, we're going to focus on our Jets here, and they have a number of needs. I like to call them improvements. I mean, needs is a strong word, but let's say they could use some improvements in certain areas. And I guess one of the major areas where they could use an improvement is at tight end. Now, obviously, there's a lot of names out there, but I guess we could start with kind of the big names, the first round, second round, third round guys, the Eric Ebrons, the Jason Morrows, the Troy Nicholases, the Austin Saffron Jenkinsons. Now, again, keep it in mind that Marty Morningwig runs the West Coast offense. He's looking for a guy to stretch the seam, you know, go over the middle, and he doesn't really have that right now. Jeff Cumberland's a veteran, but he's not the fastest tight end, so I think he would look for somebody who could take the top off. So why don't we start with the guys who are going to be in the upper echelon of tight ends, and then after that we can kind of look at maybe some back-end guys if the Jets choose to go that way.
Yeah, and tight end is positioned this year, I think, may have as drastic of a drop-off from number one to number two as any in this entire class. You have Eric Ebron from North Carolina, who's going to be the first tight end off the board. somewhere in that top 10 to 20. And I think it's going to be towards the higher end of that. I wouldn't be surprised if he went as high as number 8 to the Buffalo Bills. I think the Giants at 12 are a potential landing spot. But if you're looking for a true impact, dynamic tight end, a guy who maybe has the potential to be one of the top 5 to 7 players at his position, you really have to get Ebron. Because I don't know if you can say that for other guys in this class. Jason Morrow from Texas Tech would probably be the closest. And like Ebron, he's more of that one-dimensional pass-catching specialist. But then the other top two guys, Troy Nichols from Notre Dame, Austin Seferian-Jenkins from Washington, more of that well-rounded weapon that provides value as both a pass catcher but also as a blocker. But not nobody's going to refuse either of those guys for Jimmy Graham anytime soon. So if you want a potential stud tight end, I think Ebron's the guy that you have to get in this class. And I think he would be a strong possibility for the Jets. And I'm not sure he's going to get to them, but if he's still available for the Jets there at number 18, I think they should jump all over him. Just because, sure, they could use a receiver too or use help at other positions, but there's depth, especially a wide receiver. You're not going to find another tight end like Eric Ebron in this class. So I think it's one of those cases where if you don't get the top guy, you probably just want to wait, because I'm not so sure how much of an upgrade the second or third tier is going to offer the Jets over Cumberland, who, like you say, he's not a star by any stretch, but he showed some signs, and he's probably better than what they're going to get in maybe the third, fourth, fifth round of this draft. It's just not a really deep crop. And that's not to say there aren't some intriguing talents, but if you're looking for star potential at that position, it's basically Ebron or bust, in my opinion.
Well, let's just say, for example, the Jets do decide to go in the later rounds. Now, they have 12 picks, so let's say fifth to seventh round, they got three compensatory picks in the sixth round. So I'm going to throw out some names to you, and if you want to add some names, please feel free. I guess it's C-Day Fedorowicz. And
yep.
Now I'm hearing a lot about A.C. Leonard from Tennessee State. Now, some off-the-field issues, and that kind of, you know, John Idzik, he's kind of a no-nonsense guy. He has had an issue with Mike Goodson, but that was after he signed. So I wonder if that might scare him away. Arthur Lynch out of Georgia, or Crockett Gilmore, who I thought had a pretty decent Senior Bowl, if I remember correctly. So, I mean, are these any names that you think might intrigue the Jets in the later rounds, given the fact that they have these picks, they have any? Now, look, let me just say this. The last two drafts, I swore up and down that somewhere the Jets would take a tight end, and they didn't. But if I'm looking at names and saying later round prospects, these are the names that jump out at me. What do you think about them, and what do you think about maybe somebody else who I'm missing out on?
Well, and three of those four names you mentioned are kind of fall under the category of more substance than style. I think guys like Arthur Lynch from Georgia, Crockett Gilmore from Colorado State, probably profile as more backup blocking type specialists at the next level. It's not to say they can't contribute as pass catchers in a short to intermediate range, but it's not the type of threat that is going to keep opposing defenses up at night on Saturday. So, and then C.J. Fedorowicz from Iowa is kind of the rich man's version of that. Just a really good, solid all-around tight end, but not necessarily a dominant pass catcher or blocker. Now, I think he has a chance to be a low-end starter in the NFL, maybe a poor man's Heath Miller type of player. But once again, I don't know that you have that dynamic potential. And let's face it, especially in the early rounds, if a team's going to take a tight end, more often than not, it's not necessarily for their blocking skills. Now, that can change in the late rounds if you're looking for a number two, number three type and a blocking specialist. But when you're talking about those premium valuable draft picks, they want a guy who can be a difference maker. And Fedorowicz, a good player, probably going to be a top 100 pick, but not a difference maker in my opinion. But there are some interesting guys. You mentioned A.C. Leonard from Tennessee State, who, even though he played at a small school, he was a big school talent. He started off at a big-time Division I program, had some off-the-field issues, which is how he ended up at Tennessee State, but really opened some eyes at the scouting combine, tested out extremely well. He ran in the 4.5s, more of an H-back type. He's not going to offer you a whole lot as a blocker, but he can definitely catch the ball. But there's going to be some other interesting options at tight end, too. I mean, Xavier Grimble from USC is a former top-rated recruit who never quite lived up to that potential in college, but could end up being a better pro than college player. Jodon Duncan from Dixie State, who might have been a top 100 pick if not for injuries, and durability is a big concern with him, but he's a talented guy. Jacob Peterson from Wisconsin, following in that long line of Owen Daniels, Garrett Gilbert, et cetera, from that Badger program. So there are some intriguing options at tight end, and there's absolutely going to be guys all throughout the draft, early, middle, late rounds, that can come in and contribute. But if you're looking for, like I say, star potential, I think there's probably one guy in this class.
Just one last thing to follow up is the name I hear a lot is Colt Loyola from Oregon. I mean, again, off the field issues, red flag, John Izik. I mean, what do you think of his potential moving forward, given all the issues he's had off the field, but his potential on the field?
Yeah, huge character red flags in terms of not only and to the point where it's spilled over to legal issues in the court systems, and each team's going to evaluate that differently. On talent alone, I thought he had a chance at the beginning of the year to be a first-round pick. I think he has that type of talent. But each team is going to have to do their due diligence and evaluate his issues off the field. And I think he gets drafted. I think at some point some team's going to decide, well, the potential rewards outweigh the risks. But you just don't know, still lingering this Aaron Hernandez situation. There are some similarities there, the same position, and you wonder if that went so poorly for the Patriots, you wonder if teams are going to be reluctant to take chances on guys like Loyola. This could end up being kind of a litmus test for that, but I think somebody rolls the dice on Loyola at some point on the last day of the draft, and that's going to be an ultimate boom or bust type of pick. If he gets his head on straight and gets his life in order and fulfills his potential, he has star potential. He has that type of talent. He would probably be the number two tight end in this class on talent alone, but serious off-the-field issues that just completely cloud his stock.
Scott, one of the biggest needs for the Jets in the draft, obviously, is going to be the wide receiver. They added Eric Decker, but they're still looking to add a dynamic receiver. And based on every report we've read and based on your website, this is an extremely deep wide receiver class. In the first round, the Jets have been tied to Marquise Lee, Kelvin Benjamin, Brandon Cooks, Odell Beckham. Where do you see the Jets going in the first round? Like, where do you see these guys falling in the first round?
Well, and I do still think wide receiver is a need for the Jets, even though they signed Eric Decker. The question is it a first-round need still, or is it a second, third, fourth-round type of need? And the Jets, I guess, are the only ones that can answer that question. But I think wideout's absolutely going to be in the mix in the first round, and you hit on the names that are going to be in the conversation. Sammy Watkins from Clemson is going to be gone. I'm pretty sure Mike Evans from Texas A&M will be as well, but you mentioned him, Marquise Lee from USC, Kelvin Benjamin from Florida State, Brandon Cooks from Oregon State, and Odell Beckham from LSU. And it kind of goes not just for the first round, but all throughout the draft. What type of player are you looking for? Because those are four guys with relatively similar grades, but in some cases, completely different types of players. So to a large degree, I think it depends on what you're looking for. But that's the nice thing about this wide receiver class. Regardless, you want a big possession type, you want a small, shifty guy who can create after the catch, did you want a guy who can also be a return man? There's something for everyone. And we had an unprecedented number of underclassmen came out, 19 wide receivers alone. And I truly believe in this type of class, you're going to be getting receiver in the third round who most years would have been in first-round consideration. And I think that goes all throughout. I think in the second round you're going to get – or in the fourth round you're going to get a second-round talent, the fifth, the third. So if ever there was a year to take advantage of the depth at a position, it's wide receiver. And what a team like the Jets and anyone else is looking at a wide on the first round, and there's a number of them, especially late in the first round, the Chiefs, potentially the Browns, the Panthers, the 49ers, they could all be looking at receivers. What they have to ask themselves is the guy that we're going to get in mid to late first round that much better than what's going to be available in the mid to late second round? And I think the answer to that is going to be, let's wait. And that's what I would do if I were running a team, because you have a finite number of resources and you got to figure out the best way to allocate them. And I'm not so sure if you're not getting Sammy Watkins or Mike Evans in this class, if you're not better off waiting on a wideout. And, you know, I'm sure we'll probably get into some of the names of some of the receivers in the second to third round range that they could look at, but it's a pretty impressive group.
Yeah, and say the Jets, the one guy that I keep hearing things about, and the reports that go from, like, high to low on him is Marquise Lee. And people say, look at his tape from 2 years ago, look at his play last year. What's your evaluation on Lee?
He's one of those guys I think it's pretty easy to make a case for or against, depending on which side of the coin you're on. I think you have a pretty strong argument either way. For those who like Marquise Lee, you look at him and say, well, he's pretty polished. He's a good route runner. He does the little things. He's a dynamic athlete. He's a return man. He can create after the catch. He can get down the field vertically. And he'll remind you maybe of a poor man's Marvin Harrison type of player. Now, on the other side of the equation, you look and say, well, he's not the biggest guy in the world. He's been dinged up. Is durability a concern, especially since he has somewhat of a slight frame? He's dropped some balls, which is a concern. People tend to overlook a wide receiver that drops balls, but that's kind of important when you're a wide out, so that's a concern. So I almost tend to think that Marquise Lee is going to slide a little bit on draft day, and I think he could still be in the mix as early as the middle of the first round, but if he fell to the late latter part of the first round or even into the second round, would I be shocked? Absolutely not. And we saw kind of a similar thing with Robert Woods last year. And you mentioned Marquise Lee had an incredible sophomore season, but regressed a little bit as a junior. He's not exactly striking while the iron is hot. He doesn't have the momentum that someone like Brandon Cooks or Kelvin Benjamin or some of these other guys have. So, you know, and when it comes right down to it, there's definitely tiebreakers that could work against Lee. But it really just depends on what type of receiver you're looking for. Maybe you want a bigger set. Big possession guy like Kelvin Benjamin, who's 6'5", 230 pounds, and if that's the case, Lee might not even be in the conversation. So it really comes down to not only a first round, but second, third. What type of player are you looking for?
Yeah, and I definitely agree with you. It seems like these receivers, there's so much debate around them. It's like basically it's finding a guy that fits your needs. And the one guy that seems to be hot in Jets Nation, this guy is like becoming a fan favorite instantaneously, is Odell Beckham. I mean, it seems like everybody's talking about him. You know, there's ties, the special teams coach, everything else. What's your evaluation of Beckham? How would you see him fitting in, like, the West Coast offense with Marty?
Well, and LSU has a couple of really good receivers that are probably going to be selected before the end of the third round, and not only Beckham, but also Jarvis Landry from LSU. And I think to a certain degree they kind of drew the attention away from each other because there was two of them there. Not all the focus, the star power was on one or the other. But I think Beckham has clearly started to separate now from Landry because he tested better. And we expected that. We knew that Odell Beckham was a more explosive athlete. And a faster player, whereas Landry is more of that polished, well-rounded type. But Landry ran even poorer than expected at the scouting combine, which kind of hurts him now. That could be a Keenan Allen type of situation where you maybe get him at a bargain point in the draft. I think the film probably says second round, you might be able to get him in the third round, especially in this class when, you know, there's just so much talent at wideout and they're so tightly compacted together, it's not going to take much to maybe tilt the scales in one or the other's favor. So, but I think Beckham is clearly the better prospect of the two just because, like I said, the superior athleticism, he's got some return ability as well, and he could come off the board as early as the middle of the first round, and I think he's gone by the latter part of the first round. I mentioned all those teams in late round one that are going to consider receiving. I have a hard time seeing not seeing one of them pull the trigger on Beckham.
Now, where would you see two receivers I can kind of keep an eye on? Where do you see like an Allen Robinson and a Jordan Matthews falling to?
See, and a problem both of those guys have is they're very good players, and those are classic examples of guys who I think most years would be very much in that first-round conversation. But this year, it's just such a deep crop of talent, and both of those guys, there's not a huge flash factor with them. I don't know that you have true number one go-to target upside. Even though, especially Matthews ran a little better than expected in workouts, but I don't necessarily think he plays to that speed. Robinson ran high 4.5s, low 4.6s, which was about what was expected, and they're both big guys anyways. Nobody expected them to run 4.3, but once again, when it is so tightly packed together at that position, you have to find ways to separate, and I think you could probably be called nitpicking to a certain degree, but you kind of have to figure out. But that's one of those things. I mean, if you were, for example, the Jets, would you rather have Marquise Lee from USC in the first round, or you could get Allen Robinson? I guarantee you either Jordan Matthews or Allen Robinson are going to be available, if not both, for their second-round pick. And there's going to be value in the third round as well with a guy like Paul Richardson from Colorado. I think Brandon Coleman from Rutgers is being underrated. Martavis Bryant from Clemson is a super physically talented guy, kind of a poor man Stephen Hill, which probably doesn't endear him to Jets fans too terribly much yet. But on the other hand, is he the next Stephen Hill or is he the next Demaryius Thomas? I mean, there's both sides to that coin. So teams are drooling over that potential with that freakish blend of size and speed and athleticism. So just a tremendous – and I haven't even got into the middle rounds yet. So this is just an incredible crop of receivers. And like I said, I think Robinson and Matthews. And then also Dante Moncrief from Ole Miss, another guy. This is a 6'3", 220-pound receiver who runs a 4.4. I mean, that's first round on paper every day of the week. But this year, it's almost as if he's an afterthought.
All right, folks, well, we're speaking with Scott Wright from DraftCountdown.com. I suggest if you love the draft, even if you just like the draft, you got to check out Scott's site. It is a one-stop shop. You will get everything that you need to know about the draft, about the prospects. It certainly is a fantastic place to learn about what's going to happen come May 8th through the 10th. But, Scott, I want to kind of shift gears now and go into the running backs. Now, the Jets do have Chris Ivory. He's kind of a workhorse, a little bit of an injury history. Bilal Powell, serviceable, catch the ball out of the backfield. They kind of carried the load last year. The Jets are actually sixth in the league in rushing. But I think they're definitely looking for a jack-of-all-traits kind of running back, a speed back, a guy who can take it up through the tackles if he has to, who can carry a little bit of load if necessary, but also catch that swing pass out of the backfield and take it to the house. You know, a guy who catches a two-yard pass, makes someone miss, and goes 70 yards. Now, here's some names that I'm looking at. I'm looking at Lake Seastrunk, DeAnthony Thomas, Charles Sims. Here's another name, maybe a little bit outside the realm because of his slow 40 time, which is Kadeem Carey. But why don't you just give us your perspective on the running backs and which ones would fit what the Jets are looking for and where you kind of see them falling to. I know running backs generally don't go in the first round because of their durability concerns.
Yeah, and that's, again, teams have a finite number of resources, and they have to figure out what's the best way to allocate them, and they're coming to the conclusion that it's not at running back. It's not worth using a premium resource or big free agent dollars on the running back position because history has shown time and time again that you can get productive guys at running back all throughout the draft, and that's going to be the case again this year. And another position that was really aided by the influx of underclassmen talent, and if they're looking for a jack-of-all-trades type, you mentioned some of the names I would bring up. Lake Seastrunk from Baylor, I'm a big fan of his. I think of a LeSean McCoy type when I see Lake Seastrunk, just an explosive athlete with elite speed, a little straight line-ish. He didn't get used as a pass catcher much in college, but that was more a result of the scheme and him not being asked to do it than him being unable to do it. And I think he showed pretty good hands in workouts. So he's a guy I really like in the top 100. You mentioned DeAnthony Thomas from Oregon, who's tiny. He's very small, but a dynamic playmaker, a guy who's a threat to score every time he touches the ball, whether it be as a running back, a wide receiver. You can line him out wide, put him in the slot. Can be help you as a return man. You mentioned Charles Sims from West Virginia, probably maybe one of the better mixes of the two, a guy who could potentially carry the load but is also a well-rounded player who can block, catch the ball in the backfield. Kadeem Carey from Arizona, a really good pass catcher to the point where during his pro day they actually had him work out a little bit as a wide receiver. Now, super-duper productive, but very poor workouts, both at the scouting combine and his pro day. And running back, again, that's another position where you're trying to differentiate. And when you're running 4.6, 4.7, that's not the end of the world. There's plenty of running backs in the league, Arian Foster included, that have been productive without elite speed. But if you're trying to decide between two guys and one runs a 4.4 and one runs a 4.7, that's a pretty easy tiebreaker. Devontae Freeman from Florida State, who was kind of in a rotation there in a super talented Seminoles backfield, but he kind of emerged as the main guy there. A couple others I'd mentioned, Dree Archer from Kent State, kind of a poor man's DeAnthony Thomas, very similar type of player. Extremely undersized, but kind of a jack-of-all-trades and all-purpose weapon. And then one guy people aren't really talking a lot about, but who has a chance, I've even heard as high as the top 100, but I think certainly in the middle rounds, Jerick McKinnon from Georgia Southern. Interesting prospect. He played in an offense in college where he was basically the quarterback, so a little bit of a projection, but he went to the Senior Bowl. He showed that he could get the job done as that third-down situational running back. So he's going to come off the board earlier than people think, somewhere between rounds 3 through 5. And that's just the jack-of-all-trades, the situational maybe types that we're talking about. We haven't even talked about the Carlos Hyde from Ohio State, Trey Mason from Auburn, Jeremy Hill from LSU. Running back is just another one of those positions, really deep, and you're going to be able to get a good one rounds 1 through 7. No matter where you want to take one, there's going to be a good one available. And I think it would behoove the Jets to bring one in. And I don't know if it's a top 3-round priority, but I think somewhere those middle to late rounds, I think it would behoove them to bring in a guy at that position. And if for nothing else, competition. But like you said, even though they were relatively productive in the grand scheme of things as a rushing attack, they really don't have that difference maker and that one guy they can hang their hat on.
Yeah, and there's one last guy that you didn't touch on that I would like to just get your opinion on, which is Bishop Sankey. So, they're looking for, the jack-of-all-trades kind of guy, especially the guy, I'll give you a name, Leon Washington. The Jets haven't had a Leon Washington-type guy in quite a while. The guy who, when he caught that 2-yard pass, look out, because he could do something magic with the football. What about Bishop Sankey? I'd like to get your opinion on that.
Bishop Sankey's a good player. I don't know if he's that type of player. I think he ran better than expected in workouts, but not necessarily a dynamic athlete or a big play threat. The guy I heard him compared to, and I tend to agree with, is Ray Rice. I think he's that type of player where not real big, but he plays bigger. He's tough. He's shown that he can carry a big workhorse, that he can be a workhorse and kind of carry the load for a team. Really good player. And I think he potentially – so much with these running backs, too, it comes down to the situation they go into. I mean, you look at last year, one of the first running backs drafted was Christine Michael, who went to the Seattle Seahawks, I believe, late in round two. Well, he got buried on the depth chart with, I think, third or fourth string, and he never got the opportunity. Meanwhile, a guy like Zach Stacy went two or three rounds later to the St. Louis Rams, but they didn't have Marshawn Lynch, so he got an opportunity to win that starting job, and he took advantage of it. So with running backs, so much comes down to opportunity and whether you get a chance. And not to take anything away from any of these guys' talent, but to a certain degree, running backs are relatively interchangeable. So and I think Sankey is one of those guys. I'd be more than happy if I needed a running back, if I could get him in the third or fourth round. I think that's a great area for him. But I just don't know that he's a dynamic enough talent at that position that would make me use a top 100 pick on him. It's to the point now at running back, you have to have something special about your game to go, I think, in those top few rounds because you know he can get Zach Stacy later on. So running back, I think, is a position that's going to continue to be devalued. Last year, first time in 50 years that a running back wasn't selected in the first round, and I think we're going to go back to back.
Scott, based on the wide receiver depth that we mentioned earlier, I have a funny feeling the Jets could very well go corner in the first round. I mean, there's some defensive backs, you know, Justin Gilbert, Darquise Dennard, Bradley Roby, all these guys everybody keeps talking about. And I have a funny feeling based on the Jets' glaring need in the secondary, they could go corner. What is your evaluation of the top corners in the draft, and who do you think would be available at 18?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because I was actually just thinking about that today, and I think you have a pretty clearly defined top group. I think you have Justin Gilbert from Oklahoma State and Darquise Dennard from Michigan State, who are probably going to go somewhere in the middle of the first round, top 20. And then I think you have Bradley Roby from Ohio State, Kyle Fuller from Virginia Tech, who are going to go somewhere in the back third of round one. And then Jason Verrett from TCU would be number five, and maybe he sneaks in. He's a little undersized. He's coming off of surgery, so maybe that pushes him into round two. But I think that's your top group. But then I think there's a drop-off. And honestly, I'm not so sure there's not going to be better value available at cornerback in round three than round two. So if you need one, I either want to get one in that top five, or otherwise I'm going to wait till I think round three and take advantage of the depth. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if the Jets went that direction. I think they could very easily make a case for it. And I mentioned the names, Gilbert, Dennard, maybe Roby, Fuller, the player who probably has the most momentum of that group right now. He's a player that's really highly thought of in league circles. So if they wanted to go corner, I certainly wouldn't fault them. And I would throw safety into that mix too. I don't think Ha-Ha Clinton Dix from Alabama is going to be available, but maybe a Calvin Pryor from Louisville. I would not be at all surprised to see the Jets go secondary. If it comes down to a defensive back or receiver, I would absolutely recommend going with a guy like Dennard or Fuller or Pryor and then coming back to get a receiver in the second round just when you're just looking at the kind of the big picture and what's going to give us the best combination with those first two picks. I definitely think it would be corner wide receiver more so than wide receiver corner.
And I definitely agree with you. And I actually have a question, you're non-draft related. And it's you know, Dee Millinder started out slow last year for a variety of reasons. He missed parts of training camp due to injury. He struggled. He was benched twice. What was your evaluation of Dee Millinder as he played the Jets towards the end of last season? Like, how'd you see him perform? Because right now, everybody's counting on him to be one of their two starting corners. So how do you see him right now as an NFL player?
I think Dee Millinder is going to be fine. Like you mentioned, he got off to a rough start, and that happens to a lot of rookie cornerbacks. Those guys are going to get picked on. Veteran quarterbacks are going to lick their chops when they see a rookie out there, even if they are the 13th or the 13th overall pick or whatever. So that was to be expected to a degree, and I think we have precedent for this. A guy like Kareem Jackson, all that same Alabama program, had similar struggles. His rookie year at the Houston Texans, he looked like just a complete disaster, and he's turned his career around a little bit now. So I think Dee Millinder is going to be fine, and I think with his physical tools and his pedigree, I think he's going to be a good player. Now, is he going to replace Darrell Revis? No. I mean, he's not that type of talent, but I think he can be a solid number one corner or a really good number two, but I think that's an area where they're going to have to bring in some more bodies, at least one more. I think that has to be in their top, you know, the top three or four rounds. I think they have to bring in one more top corner, and I think they realize that, and they will.
And you already touched on it earlier. You touched on a couple of safeties, Clinton Dix and Calvin Pryor. One guy that was kind of being mentioned a lot lately is Jimmy Ward. What's your evaluation of Jimmy Ward at safety?
Yeah, and for those who follow the draft last year, I think he's similar to a guy like Jonathan Cyprian, who was an early second-round pick by the Jacksonville Jaguars out of Florida International. And the reason I say they're similar, because neither is necessarily the biggest guy in the world or the fastest guy in the world, but they play bigger, they play faster, and they compensate with excellent intangibles. They truly love the game. They're physical. They have great instincts. So I think that's a comparison to be made there with Jimmy Ward. And you're right, he has a lot of fans in the drafting community. I don't think he's quite as good of a prospect as Cyprian was, but I think Ward's probably going to come off the board somewhere in that second or third round. And this is another position where I think you have a pretty clearly defined top two with Clinton Dix and Pryor. But then you have question marks, and I think it's going to come down to each individual team. I don't know that there's going to be much of a consensus when you're talking safeties, say, 3 through 10. I mean, you know, you have Ward, you have LaMarcus Joyner from Florida State, who's kind of a poor man's Tyrann Mathieu, where he's really undersized. He can play corner. He can play safety. He's physical. He's aggressive. He's a playmaker. There's a lot to like about LaMarcus Joyner, everything except the size. They have Terrence Brooks from Florida State, who I think is a little underrated, a really smooth athlete in the secondary. Anton Exum from Virginia Tech coming into the year, he had a first-round grade, missed most of the season battling back from a torn Achilles that he suffered in the offseason playing pickup basketball. But he could be a steal for someone in the latter part of day two, early part of day three. So there's some intriguing options at safety, but this is another one of those positions. If you really need one, if it's really a priority for you, I think you want to get one of those top two, because then after that there's question marks. And that's not to say you can't get a starting safety in the third, fourth, fifth round, but it's not going to be as easy. I think you're going to have to work a little harder in this class to find that starting caliber safety beyond that top two.
All right, everybody. Well, we're speaking with Scott Wright from DraftCountdown.com. He's giving us his insight on the upcoming NFL draft. And Scott, I want to now focus on an area that, you know, Rex Ryan, he loves his pass rushers. He loves his defensive linemen. He loves his linebackers. And one thing real quick, Garrett McIntyre, who was more of a special teams player, but was a role player at the outside linebacker position for the Jets. He was a restricted free agent. He was not tendered, and I was a little surprised, given the fact that he played a little bit of a role on defense and was a pretty good special teamer. I got a feeling the Jets are leaving a roster spot open for another pass rusher. Now Calvin Pace is going on 34, had a pretty good year last year. Who knows what he's got left in the tank. So why don't we start with the outside linebacker position? I also want to get into inside linebacker a little bit, because they're kind of thin in the depth department. They have David Harris and DeMario Davis, but behind them, they don't really have much. So why don't we start with outside linebacker, pass rusher, a guy like Anthony Barr, who might be available at 18. And do you see him as a fit in the 3-4 defense, a guy who could play in space and also rush the passer?
Yeah, and I absolutely think a pass rusher is going to be another area that the Jets are going to strongly consider in the early rounds. They were, I believe, middle of the pack in terms of sack production last year, which I guarantee you isn't good enough for a guy like Rex Ryan. And he's not going to say, oh, we're middle of the pack, that's acceptable. No, a defensive guy, he wants to continue to apply pressure to quarterbacks, because that's how you win games. Pressure leads to mistakes. Mistakes lead to wins for the opposing team. So nobody understands that as well as Rex Ryan. So I absolutely think that they're going to be in the market for another pass rusher, because let's face it, Calvin Pace is in his mid-30s and at the tail end of his career. And I think there's a distinction to be made here, and I think the Jets are kind of a perfect example of that. All 3-4 defenses aren't necessarily the same. Different teams run that scheme might be looking for different things at different positions, and I think the Jets and outside linebacker kind of exemplify that, where Rex Ryan, he wants those bigger ranger guys. He wants the 6'4", 6'5", 250, 265-pound types. So I think that maybe rules out a guy like D4 from Auburn, who under normal circumstances I think might be in the conversation there in round one if they wanted to go that route. I just don't think he fits the profile of what the Jets and Rex Ryan look for. I think in round one, if the Jets were going to go outside linebacker, I would say Coney Ealy from Missouri. And he's an interesting guy, and he's going to be helped by the pedigree. I mean, Missouri has done just a tremendous job when it comes to producing defensive linemen. Justin Smith, Alden Smith, Jets fans certainly know Sheldon Richardson. And Coney Ealy is going to be the next guy to kind of follow in their footsteps. And I don't think every team in the league feels he can be a 3-4 outside linebacker, but I think the Jets are probably one of them that do. So I think if they wanted to go with a pass rushing outside backer in round one, I think Ealy would probably be the guy who would make the most sense.
Well, maybe looking a little bit later, a guy like Kyle Van Noy, or I've heard that DeMarcus Lawrence from Boise State, I heard he's kind of climbing up boards. I mean, again, you know better than me. I mean, what do you think of these two guys potentially maybe in the second round, third round coming to the Jets?
Yeah, I think you hit the range. I think second round for both guys. And Van Noy, he's a player I think isn't necessarily getting the respect he deserves. Not necessarily a dynamic in any one aspect of the game, but one of the most well-rounded linebackers in this class when it comes to playing the run, dropping the coverage. He can blitz off the edge and be that pass rusher. But there again, with I think both him and Lawrence, and I love DeMarcus Lawrence from Boise State. Super underrated. I have him in my top 32. One of the best pure pass rushers in this class, and I think he's going to go in the top 50. But I think in both those cases, I mentioned the profile. Do they necessarily fit? I a couple names maybe later on in round two or round three that I would say might be better fits for the Jets. Maybe Trent Murphy from Stanford, a guy who was super productive as a senior. Was just unblockable at times, and not the best athlete, not the greatest speed. I don't think you want him running downfield in coverage too often, but blue-collar pass rusher, extremely tough, hard-nosed, just a nonstop motor. Trent Murphy, I'm a little higher on him than some, I guess, but I think he'd be a nice pick for them in the second round, or maybe in the third round, Adrian Hubbard from Alabama. Now, this is an interesting guy. As a redshirt sophomore in 2012, he led national champion Alabama Crimson Tide in sacks. Almost came out, decided to go back for another year, didn't have as good of a junior season. Almost seemed like maybe he had one eye on the pros, maybe he was playing not to be hurt, but wasn't as productive. But this is a long, rangy outside backer. He's 6'6", 252, so he's got that big frame. He's got experience playing in the 3-4 defense. He's shown that he can turn and run downfield, and he is comfortable in space and coverage. So Adrian Hubbard, a little bit of a boom or bust type of prospect. I think it probably could go either way, but when you're in the third or fourth round, I think he's potentially a first-round type of talent. So I think third, fourth round, he might be worth rolling the dice on a guy like that.
All right, just to kind of follow up on that, what about a guy like Jeremiah Atoshi out of Georgia Tech? Hope I didn't butcher his name. And as far as inside linebacker, Christian Jones, maybe I know he can play a little outside linebacker too, but maybe a little depth at inside linebacker. And a guy like Yarwin Smallwood out of Connecticut. What do you think of those three players? And the guy at Georgia Tech, I think, would be the outside linebacker, pass rusher, potentially. What do you think of his fit with the Jets?
Yeah, and Jeremiah Tauchu from Georgia Tech has experience playing both defensive end and outside linebacker. He's playing a 4-3 and a 3-4 scheme. A really good athlete. And what I like, what I was impressed with the Tauchu watching film of him is assignment sound. He's not one of these guys who is over-aggressive and all he's concerned about is making his plays and filling his stat sheet. He stays back, he keeps his contained, and does the little things, which I think goes a long way, and it's the type of thing that's going to endear him to a coaching staff. Christian Jones from Florida State reminds me very much of the guy that the Patriots drafted in round two last year, Jamie Collins. Just a dynamic athlete, really has a rangy frame, super long arms, and you mentioned the versatility, inside linebacker, outside linebacker. They used him as a third down specialist pass rushing defensive end this past year, let him put his hand in the dirt and rush off the edge, and he was very effective doing that. So I really like Christian Jones. I think he's going to be selected. To me, he has a day two grade. I wouldn't be shocked if he slid to the early part of day three, but somewhere around two through four, I think Christian Jones is going to be a nice value for someone. And bloodlines and just a explosive athlete. And then Yawen Smallwood from UConn, I think he's still in the mix in that top group of inside linebackers, and that's a position that isn't always coveted on draft day. On average, there's only about five taken, a little under five actually taken in the top three rounds. So it's kind of those few spots, they're pretty precious. I think you have C.J. Mosley from Alabama is going to be the first inside backer off the board in the first round. But then Smallwood's right there competing with Chris Borland from Wisconsin, Shane Scoe from Stanford, Jordan Zumwalt from UCLA, Layman Barrow from LSU to be that next guy. And I think the range there, too, I think rounds two through four. And maybe I'm a little higher on him than some, but I like Smallwood. He's in the and kind of a theme here. You could probably tell I'm a sucker for guys who have those frames, especially when you're talking about cornerbacks, linebackers. I like those guys that have those projectable frames and athleticism. I think Smallwood has that. So it's a good group. Of that group, of those three that we mentioned, I kind of like Christian Jones the best. I think when it comes to the versatility and the physical tools, I think he probably brings you the best package.
So, I mean, thank you again for joining us tonight. This has been incredible information. And I guess I just want to wrap it up with one of our favorite topics in Jet Nation is the quarterback position. What was your evaluation of Geno Smith last year? I mean, as expected, he had some rookie struggles. He came on late, but he played again. He excelled against very poor teams. So what was your analysis of Geno Smith last year?
I like Geno Smith. I had him as my number one quarterback, and I believe I had him as my number 24 prospect overall. So I think it was a good value, and, it's a tough situation he went into, and I said that at the draft where there was going to be pressure on him to play right away, and he didn't have weapons, and the spotlight shines bright in New York. And I think, he had his ups and downs. I think there's positives and negatives. We'll see. I think the jury is still very much out, but if I were the Jets, I'd be content with him going forward as my young quarterback, and I'd keep stick with him. I mean, I'm not sure what the upside is of playing Michael Vick, to be honest. I think you stick with Geno Smith. I think that gives you the best chance to be successful both in the short term and the long term. I think bringing in Vick was a good move as long as he's the backup. But I think if that's taking snaps away and development time away from the young signal caller that could help him not only this year but 5 years from now, I think it's a mistake. And let's face it, Michael Vick, we're not sure that he's an upgrade over Geno Smith. I mean, Michael Vick, and that's assuming he can stay healthy, which is a big if at this point in his career. So I like Michael Vick as a veteran backup to mentor Geno Smith. I don't like it if Michael Vick is starting.
Now, I completely agree with what you're saying, but would you, if you're the Jets, do you see a quarterback falling to the fourth round and seeing the Jets pull the trigger and actually draft another quarterback?
If I ran an NFL team, I would draft a quarterback every single year at some point. Now, I'm not always saying it's going to be the first, second, or third round. Some years it might be the fifth, sixth, or seventh. But every year I would draft a quarterback because not only does it breed competition, keep turning the roster, but if you hit on one, that's a valuable commodity. You can deal that. You can flip a good backup quarterback and find help at another position. And I always go back to the old saying is if you wait until you need a quarterback, it's probably too late. You don't want to wait until it's a need. You've got to be progressive at that position. So I absolutely would draft a quarterback not only this year but every year. And I think the Jets are going to consider it. And this is a pretty deep crop of quarterbacks. There's going to be some pretty intriguing developmental guys available depending on where they want to go. I think the guy who stands out in the middle rounds is Logan Thomas from Virginia Tech, who a couple years ago we thought was going to be the number one overall pick. And on paper, physically, he looks like a number one overall pick, and you just know that there's going to be someone in the NFL who feels like they can coach him up and help him maximize that potential. And if you do that, he's going to end up being a steal. Now, he could turn out to be just a monumental bust as well, but fourth, fifth round, it's probably worth the risk. But even beyond that, I mean, Tom Savage from Pittsburgh would be an intriguing guy in the late round. Connor Shaw from South Carolina, Taj Boyd from Clemson, Aaron Murray from Georgia. I mean, this is a pretty deep crop of quarterbacks. I think there's going to be some pretty good options for the Jets if they want to bring in somebody to compete for that number three spot. And then, like I said, if I were them, I absolutely would.
Yeah, I think you're definitely going to as well. I mean, John Izzy keeps preaching competition, so I definitely wouldn't be surprised. Scott, I mean, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. Can you please give all our listeners, like, your website, your Twitter, everything, how they can reach you and follow you?
Yeah, absolutely. The website is draftcountdown.com. Everything, as always, is 100% free. I've got a mock draft. New mock draft will be coming next week. I just updated all the rankings by position, overall, sleepers, overrated, underrated, so check that out. We got discussions on the message boards and the forums. We got the podcast, like you mentioned. You can get it at blogtalkradio.com/draftcountdown or on iTunes. And then you can also follow me on Twitter at draftcountdown.
All right, yeah, Scott, and this is Dennis, and I just want to thank you as well for coming on, giving your perspective on the draft, your perspective on who you think the New York Jets might be taking a look at, who fits where they're going to fall. You know, it's really exciting. It's now a prime time thing. We're looking forward to it. Jet fans haven't seen 12 draft picks, sometimes over a two-year span, let alone in one draft. So we're really looking forward to seeing how John Izzy handles his first draft with his own staff, what happens with the picks they have and how they work out. And we do appreciate your insight. I highly recommend, even if you're just an average football fan, check out Scott's site. It has wonderful information. It's so easy. The reading the perspectives on the players who are in college, who are coming out, it's easy to understand. He gives you a wonderful perspective on them. So, Scott, I want to just thank you for coming on Jet Nation Radio tonight and helping us out with the draft.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me. Always fun talking draft to you guys.
All right, Scott, you take care. Good night now.
You too.
All right, folks. Well, that was Scott Wright from DraftCountdown.com. And Tyson, you know what? First of all, I just want to thank Scott for giving us his time. I mean, what a wealth of information he has. It just was terrific, and you know, I don't even know where to begin. I just want to also let the audience know that the phone lines are open now. If you want to discuss what Scott had to say, the number is 646-716-4697. Please hit one when prompted. Tyson and I would certainly love to discuss what Scott went over. But Tyson, just what do you think? Just wonderful amount of information.
Yeah, like we mentioned earlier, Scott Wright is an encyclopedia when it comes to the draft. I mean, not only does he know like names and colleges and backgrounds, he knows the fit for the system, excuse me, everything else. But I think it's the one biggest point that came out of this was based on the depth at wide receiver, he kind of recommended the Jets do go corner in the first round, saying, would you rather have a Marquise Lee in the first round, or you can get an Allen Robinson and a Jordan Matthews in the second round and go corner in the first. So, you know, for a long time, I think most Jet fans are saying, we're going to get either Ebron or the best receiver in the first round. And you know what? My change, I'm going to change myself, saying, you know what? If Ebron's not there, based on what he said, he's the only dynamic playmaker. If he's not there, I may go best corner there and then look to the wide receiver second round. I mean, Dennis, what's your take on that?
No, look, the one thing about the Ebron situation is that if he's off the board especially, I mean, the way he made it seem, Scott, was just, okay, after Ebron, it's just a bunch of guys. You know, you're not really getting, I mean, just throw a dart. So here was something that, again, I brought up the Garrett McIntyre situation with the fact they didn't tender him. They're kind of leaving that roster spot open, a little bit of a surprise. I was shocked to hear him mention the name Coney Elon, Missouri. As a name I had not heard. Now, I think definitely the Jets are going to go somebody behind Pace, to groom somebody behind Pace to take his spot, whether it's, you know, during the season to go in front of him or, you know, next year, okay? But I had not heard that name at all mentioned at the outside linebacker position. And you know what? He's a first-round talent. I thought he was more of a 4-3 defensive end. But, you know, from what Scott gave his analysis, said that he could play in the 3-4, that he could play in space. And again, the pedigree he discussed, and he discussed a guy we know real well, Sheldon Richardson. So, you know what? Would that shock me if they took him in the first round at 18? Would that be a shock to me and then went wide receiver later, given the depth at wide receiver? No, it wouldn't.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's like the more and more you think about it, the more options he gave us in terms of linebacker. He even mentioned safety in the first round, corner. It's making you think that this wide receiver class is so deep that Jet fans shouldn't panic in the first round if it does go best available player and it's linebacker or safety. I mean, the knowledge, there was so much information, you couldn't even write it down fast enough. It's just, I hopefully open up eyes for a lot of people. It surely opened up my eyes for certain positions. You know, it's just, with 12 picks in the draft, I mean, the Jets are really, really in a good position right now.
You know, the thing with Jimmy Ward, the comparison to Jonathan Cyprian, who had a pretty decent year there with the Jaguars, you know, that's very interesting. If he turned out to be like Jonathan Cyprian, it would definitely be great. The other thing I think I just wanted to kind of point, again, the philosophy, running backs. Like, look at like what he's saying about, and most people understand this, running backs tend to have short careers. They're not valued as much in the draft. That's why, I mean, last year no first-round running backs were taken. This year you wouldn't be shocked if no first-round running backs were taken. The guy I talked about, and he talked about a little bit too, was Lake Seastrunk out of Baylor. And you know what? Maybe you can get this guy in the fifth round. Maybe you can get him just because he had a little bit of injury at Baylor, but he is dynamic. And you know what? He surprisingly didn't catch a lot of balls at Baylor, but a lot of the scouts have said that, you know, from watching him do off-the-field workouts, they're impressed with his hands. So you know what? Running back, Kadeem Carey. Would you be shocked if I told you Kadeem Carey was sitting there in the fourth round? And here's a guy who, again, doesn't have great workout numbers, but has some great film. So, you know, you wonder if maybe the film is kind of supersede the workout stuff. And the Jets are going to get themselves a nice playmaking running back to go behind Ivory and Powell. Powell's a free agent in 2015, so maybe, again, they're talking about bringing in Chris Johnson. I just wonder if somebody in the draft could, you know, kind of be more productive moving forward and this year than bringing in a Chris Johnson.
Yeah, and that's why, like, with all this Chris Johnson talk, for me, he's a luxury item. For me personally, he doesn't make or break the Jets offseason. I understand what, you know, the explosive ability, the speed, the added dynamic to the offense. I understand all that. But for me, Chris Johnson is not an end-all, be-all for this offseason. And based on what Scott just said, he's like, you can get a good running back rounds 1 through 7. So, you know, it's like, if Chris Johnson says, you know what, I want to go to Denver, I want to go to Giants, so long, see ya. I really don't care because the draft, the resources the Jets can use to address the running back position. So, Dennis, like with everything, the Jets have flexibility. Running back, there is a need, but there's also guys that can address it, and it's not through free agencies, the draft. So I think it's really encouraging right now in terms of, like, John Isaac's ability to address some of the holes the Jets have.
Yeah, no. Do you really want a running back who's going on 29, who is coming onto his third contract? I don't know. I also thought with Scott was some of the things that he mentioned about Rex Ryan's defense and outside linebacker in particular. He does like them bigger. I mean, look at a guy like Quentin Coples and Calvin Pace. They're bigger guys. They're not the kind of smaller, quicker guys. Like he talked about D4, but he kind of eliminated him as being a fit for Rex Ryan's defense. This DeMarcus Lawrence, I do have to give Ron Pickett, will be on in a few weeks. Again, we'll do a draft show where we take calls on the draft, and Ron will be joining us. He kind of pointed him out to me, and I was glad to get Scott's input on him. And he said he really liked him as a pure pass rusher. Again, not as a blitzer, as a pass rusher, a guy who could beat one-on-one matchups. The other thing is this I want to bring up quickly to you, and we do have a caller on the line we're going to bring on in a second. You know, I hear a lot of people say this. Well, you know, you have 12 draft picks, but you're not drafting 12 starters or 12 stars or, you know, you're not solving all the Jets' needs, which, I don't think they have glaring holes at Jets. I think they could use improvements in areas like any team. I mean, you go to look some other teams, they have holes. Like, they have, like, a void in certain positions. I think the Jets have areas where maybe you could look at, and again, only the coaches and John Isaac know, okay, who do we think is going to take that step in their second year, or who's the diamond in the rough we think we got here. But, no, I don't think we're going to get 12 starters in this draft, or 12, even if they do draft 12 players. No. But can you realistically look me in the face and say, we're going to end up with 6 very productive players out of these 12? I think you could say that. Yes, you could say that. But if you have 7 draft picks, which is what you normally get, can you say we're going to get 6 out of the 7 to produce? That's very difficult. That's extremely difficult. And when you have 3 draft picks in a year, like we had in 2009, it's very difficult. I'm not a math expert, Tyson. You tell me if I'm wrong. It's very difficult to get 6 out of 3 draft picks to work out.
No, and that was always the biggest argument with Mike Tannenbaum. It was like, you know, Trader Mike, you know, he put such a premium on free agency that the law of averages in the draft are not good. There's a lot. I mean, everybody thinks you're an expert, but if everybody's an expert, we would need free agency because you draft Pro Bowlers every year. So, like you said,
yeah.
Dennis, if your success rate in the draft is 50%, like you said, if you have 12 picks, you're getting 6 players. If you only have 6 picks, you're only getting 3 players, and that's when you start screwing yourself in terms of long-term success because then you have to rely on free agency to plug holes, to find depth, all that, and that's where the problems start. So, you know, keeping your picks, making quality picks, that all helps, and that's long-term success. So that's where Trader Mike, you know, kind of really hurt himself was he was aggressive. He got guys he wanted, the Dustin Kellers and all these guys that he definitely wanted, and Sean Green traded for these guys. But at the end of the day, he hurt him for depth and just long-term growth.
Yeah, and he traded away a lot of picks for veteran players where they give big contracts to, who maybe broke down after a while. Chris Jenkins, even Brendan Edwards, they traded a couple picks and they weren't able to re-sign him. So, you know, kind of, again, that aggressive style. Idzik brings a little bit of a different style than Tannenbaum did, whether you want to blame Woody or whatever. Idzik is bringing a different approach. And I wrote this article on JetNation.com about John Idzik's building a great team. Now, I don't know if they're going to be great this year or whenever, but his philosophy is to build a great team, which is bringing guys, young guys in, behind veterans, and having guys meet at their prime at the same time. You know, a team full of superstars is doomed to failure. I mean, because what happens is you think you're getting a superstar, and you end up with somebody who doesn't produce to the level that you thought you were, or they're just a guy, and they're just plugging holes. So when you bring in this young talent, and you have a decent team, now the Jets have a pretty young, talented team on the field, don't they? Defensively. Even offensively, again, they need some growth. They need some diamonds in the rough. They need some things that go well for them. But I think ultimately what John Idzik wants to do is he wants to build a team like the Seahawks, where everything, you know, all the stars aligned, and you know what? Everything on offense and defense, especially that defense, but everything, all 53 men on the team contributed to eventually winning a championship. And that's the way I think John Idzik looks at it. But I do want to bring a friend of ours on to the program. And hold on for a minute. It's Joe from Long Beach. So, Joe, thanks for holding on. Dennis and Tyson here. I don't know if you got to listen to the whole Scott Wright interview. He went over a lot of information on the draft. So what do you got for us tonight?
Yeah, hey, guys. I want to thank you guys for letting me on the show again. Yeah, I listened to pretty much his whole interview, and I thought a lot of things that he said were, you know, right on. I don't think that Ebron's going to slide to us. I really can't see that. So my idea would be, and it's a question to you guys as well, is if we don't go corner in the first round, could you see us trading down and maybe getting some value either later in later rounds or even for a draft next year and maybe taking like a Kelvin Benjamin in the second round and getting a corner or something like that later on?
I could definitely see that happening. And based on what he – the only way I can't see that happening, they have a highly ranked corner sitting there. And they're like, yeah. like Scott said, there's five corners he thinks have like the elite group. And after that, there's a huge drop-off. So one of those guys is sitting there, and, you know, Idzik says, this is our guy, then I wouldn't trade down. I mean, you want to get – I mean, I understand you want to collect more picks and you want to get, you know, more value. But at some point, you want impact players too. So for me personally, it's like if that corner's there, great. But you know, it's like you said, if those corners aren't there or there's, say, three available still, they say, you know what, we have some wiggle room, then we can trade back, get more picks. So the cool thing is there's flexibility, man. It's like it's nice to have, like, we can move around, we can move up if we want to, we can move back if we want to, and it's not a huge pressing need saying we have to have this guy or we're screwed. We're not. We can move around. Now, would you, like Dennis brought up before, would you be surprised if they took a linebacker in the first round?
I wouldn't be surprised. I think I haven't studied the whole class of backers, but from what I hear, and like Scott was speaking about, there are some guys in here that, yeah, can rush the passer. I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't think that that's as urgent a need as, say, a wide receiver or a corner. I mean, if a guy, I forgot the guy that Dennis was speaking about earlier, if he's the pass rusher that they say he is, then sure, yeah, we can give him a look in the first round. But even at 18, though, I can't, even the backers that I looked at, I don't think even going 18 for a back in the first round, I just don't think we need them that much to overlook. If a guy like Cooks is still sitting there, or, you know, even Lee, and even though I don't like Lee that much, even if Lee is still there, I think that we should take him over, you know, taking a backer, because, you know, we can draft a backer next year.
Yeah, see, I'm to the point now, I think Scott has me completely changed where I'm looking at corner, I'm looking at safety, I'm going second round receiver now, I'm completely changed. But I guess my next question for you is, you know, one of the biggest things, we all know now at this point that running backs are devalued. They're a dime a dozen. Even the free agent running backs, they're getting $2 million a year, $3 million a year tops. Based on what he said where there's running back value in rounds 1 through 7, does that change your view at all on Jets trying to get Chris Johnson?
Absolutely not. And, you know, we've spoken about this, Tyson, multiple times, that we need speed on this team. Okay, we passed on Deshaun. I am not here to cry about that. Okay, what's done is done, all right? But we need speed on this team. We need explosiveness. And if Chris is still, you know, at a level where he can provide that, then I don't see why we wouldn't go after him. I don't really see a player, a running back in this draft that kind of mimics his speed or his playmaking ability. I see guys that are kind of all around, you know, guys that can catch, guys that can block. You know, they can run decent routes as well if we need them to go split out wide, but nobody that kind of mimics that explosiveness. So I think we should still pursue Chris Johnson, and if we can get him for a cap-friendly deal and it's not something crazy, then fine, yeah, let's go sign him. But, you know, like you said, running backs are a dime a dozen. If he wants to go, you know, wherever and get paid crazy amounts of money, then fine. But I think that's really what it all comes down to with Chris is the cap number. But, I mean, as far as talent, I can't see a running back kind of doing what he does if he's healthy in this draft.
All right, Joe. Well, listen, I got an interesting question for you, and I got to give Sean, I'm just going to give his full Twitter handle, but his name is Sean on Twitter. He actually brought this up to me and asked me this question, and I wanted to lay it out to you. Now, he asked me about an over-under, and I'm actually going to give you over-under or the number, okay? If the Jets draft, use all 12 draft picks, okay? The number is 7. Over, under, or 7 skill positions. Now, by skill positions, I mean secondary, tight end, wide receiver, running back. So here we go. You're John Isaac, or you're trying to look into a crystal ball. It's now May 11th. How many skill position players did the Jets draft? Did they draft over seven, under seven, or seven on the dot?
I'm thinking maybe over seven by one. I'm thinking eight.
Eight. Okay. Could you just give me a little, I mean, you don't have to name names or anything, but maybe positions. What are you thinking? It's maybe two receivers, the tight end. Just give me what you think maybe they ended up with, the eight.
I'm thinking a receiver. Well, a quarterback I'm thinking we're going to take late, so that's one off the board there. I'm thinking we'll probably take an offensive lineman.
I want to talk to skill position. Skill position.
Oh.
Offensive lineman don't count.
Okay.
They don't count as skill position, so go ahead.
Okay, maybe a tight end. Not offensive lineman, but a tight end. Okay.
Okay,
maybe,
tight end.
Maybe a wide receiver. You're probably going to take a safety. Probably going to take, I can see us taking two corners. Maybe like
two corners, okay.
Two corners. And I'm thinking probably a backer. So that would, that would round us out at about eight.
No, we got one tight end, one wide receiver, one safety, two cornerbacks, and a running back. That's one, two, three, four, five, six. So you have six. Are you going to take multiple wide receivers?
Yeah, that's what I was.
Okay, so you're going to take two wide receivers. Now you're at seven.
And a quarterback.
Now you're at seven. And a quarterback.
And a quarterback.
Okay, so that's going to be and your quarterback. Okay, so that's eight. So here's your eight: tight end, safety, running back, quarterback, two wide receivers, and two cornerbacks. Okay, and now how about the non-skill position? Now, here's what I think. I think the Jets are going to take at least two linebackers. I'm guessing three in this draft, because can you name me the backups behind right now, the backup inside linebackers behind David Harris and DeMario Davis?
Ooh. Maga?
He's not with the team anymore.
I can't name any of these guys off the top of my head.
I'll tell you who it is. Nick Ballore. It's Nick Ballore. That's it. That's all they got.
That's right.
That's it. So they need some depth there. David Harris is a free agent after this season. I mean, again, you know, there'll be an option to bring him back or whatever. But I think that's why I mentioned Christian Jones out of Florida State, a guy who can play outside, inside. Yeah. You know, they do need a little bit of depth there. Again, if they had – they need one guy, at least one guy who could be a backup. You know, what if Harris got hurt or whatever? So I'm also looking at a guy in free agency a little bit. And I know he has some injury concerns, but it's Pat Angerer. And I don't know where he's at with his injuries, but maybe a guy they could just sign as a depth signing, you know, kind of low-risk, high-reward. Guy's had a lot of injuries and concussions, but was, you know, pretty darn good for the Indianapolis Colts when he was healthy. So maybe they could bring a guy in like that for a year if they're worried about the depth of the position. But, you know, it is a concern as far as I can see with the team right now where they're missing a little bit of depth there. So I think three linebackers. I'm going to say two outside linebackers. Actually, I'm going to say an outside linebacker, an inside linebacker, outside linebacker, hybrid, a guy who could play either way, and an inside linebacker. That's why I mentioned this Yarwin Smallwood out of UConn. His name's been popping up a lot on the draft boards for the Jets. So I think Tyson has one other thing to throw out at you before we let you go, Joe. But you know, that's very interesting about the eight picks. I actually had seven on the dot, so we're pretty much on the same page here. Tyson, what do you got for Joe?
Well, see, I'm so glad Joe called in tonight, Dennis, because after your great article about how Isaac is building a great team, I wanted to get some different perspective on the team. So who better to ask than Joe? So, Joe, my question for you is this. Based, you know, Isaac the entire offseason looking for value guys, you know, like at the right guy at the right price. Now, the safety position for me is a concern because, you know, Antonio Allen showed flashes. But, you know, Landry back there, but he's kind of older. So, for me, guys like Chris Clemons, Major Wright, those are guys I thought would be good fits for the Jets. They weren't expensive. They could play some center field. They could move around. They signed elsewhere for very, very cheap contracts. I mean, Jason Avant today signed somewhere else for cheap contracts. Are you surprised the Jets didn't pursue these type of guys? Because based on the way they did approach the offseason, they'd be legitimate fits for the team.
Totally mind blown that we didn't go after Clemons, or if we didn't go after him, that we didn't go after him aggressively. I'm coming to understand that Isaac moves as slow as molasses, and that's just the way it is. it's his way or it's, you know what, he's all about the draft. And that's the beginning and end. And I get the philosophy. I understand it. We spoke about it multiple times. It annoyed me to death to watch DeSean Jackson sign for as little as he signed, where he signed. I felt like we could have gotten him. But I understand the philosophy, and I'm on board. I get it. But I just think that there are some things that I feel like he could have done a lot better. Like we spoke about the safety position. Allen showed flashes, like you said, but Clemens was a guy that we should have picked up. I would be interested to see if they don't move Wilson back there to safety. I think Kyle Wilson would be extremely good safety. And maybe that would prompt us to take a corner in the draft as well to replace Kyle Wilson at that position. But I can't fault Idzik because he's not done. His work is not done yet. I think he's made a lot of good moves, but a lot of the moves that he made were pretty common sense stuff. But his drafts, I mean, so far have been extremely productive. I can't be angry at him. I want to be because he's not moving fast enough on certain guys, but I get it. I get the, hey, let's not go spend big money or, you know, chase after this guy when it's like, okay, look, either you're going to come in at this price or I'm going to move forward and I'm just going to draft a guy. When you can go get a Sheldon Richardson, when you can get a D. Milner and they produce, I can't argue with you when they're producing. So I don't think that Idzik is like some savior yet. I think we still have to wait and see what this is turning out to be. But my only frustrations with him, again, is we are saving so much money. What are we saving money for? I want us to just get one guy. But if he can keep drafting guys that produce, I can't argue with the philosophy. I can't argue with the logic.
I agree with you. I mean, some of these recent moves, I mean, they're not, like I said, not high price. Like, I was hoping for Revant and Clemens, to be honest with you. And it's funny you mentioned moving Kyle Wilson to safety. This is something I want to ask Dennis about later is, you know, Dimitri Patterson is basically a slot corner. So that's where Kyle Wilson plays. So I was kind of thinking the same thing was, you know what, if you move Kyle Wilson to safety where he's already played the last couple of years, he studies film, he's been, you know, based on formation, he's already played safety. You move him back there, you have Dimitri Patterson at the nickel, you kind of can almost do that. But I guess my question for you is, I have a funny feeling that I think Ed Reed's coming back. And the problem I have with that is I understand he's a mentor. I mean, everybody's going to say he had the interceptions last year, which was cool. But, you know, it's like, for me, it's like, are you going to rely on Rex to bring back Ed Reed when you had a Clemens there? And to me, it's just like, you know, is that Rex Ryan bringing in one of his boys? Like, so if they brought Ed Reed back, what would your thoughts be on that?
I don't think that would be a great move. I like Ed Reed. Like you said, he'd be a mentor. But I honestly think he stunted Allen's growth this year. I really thought that Antonio Allen was really beginning to take off. That, like I said, that game he had against the Patriots, I really felt like he was turning a corner where he was getting he was being extremely confident on the field. His coverage skills started to step up. He started to really be aggressive out there and just get into the scheme. And when Ed Reed came, it was like they pretty much just snatched him off the field and he wasn't playing as much. And then you saw him kind of regress. And I think it just kind of halted his momentum. You know, he wasn't hot anymore. And then, you know, we didn't get much out of him after that. I just don't think it will be a good signing. I feel like it will stunt some people's growth. And Ed didn't play all that great either. He was getting beat all over the top all day long. So I just don't think it would be a good move.
All right, Joe, yeah, listen, we hear you. And you know what? Look, here's the way I feel, just really quick, and then we're going to wrap up with Joe. We have another caller on the line. We do appreciate Joe calling in and waiting as long as he did. Joe had called in a little bit earlier before we started the Scott Wright interview, which was quite a while. But here's kind of the way I feel. Some of these guys, you hear names and whatever, and again, all the teams out there have certain needs, and why didn't this team grab this person, or why did you grab them and Ed Reed and all this other stuff? I just think that John Idzik wants to go into his draft, like you said before, go into his draft, see the way the draft falls. None of us know. Whenever I look at a mock draft, I never say, oh, that player's not going in the first round. They're going to go in the fourth round. I mean, if Jevani Clowney goes in the fourth round, maybe I'll laugh. But you know what? I mean, realistically, Jimmy Ward, who was mentioned by Tyson with Scott Wright, could he go in the first round? Would I be shocked? Would I fall off my chair if he went, you know, 23rd or whatever? No. Would I be shocked if he went in the third round? No. So it's so hard to predict. So I think after Idzik clears out his board and, you know, will look and can always find guys. You know what happens during the season. These teams, whatever team's playing, oh, their offensive line is decimated. They got some guy off the street. Guess what? They win. Because there's always a lot of Jags, right? Just guys. Jags are out there. So if you need a guy, you'll find one. But, you know, are there superstars out there to be had? No, you're not going to find a superstar. I don't think the Jets are going to find a superstar in free agency. Could they find somebody maybe to make improvements? Yes. Here's the thing. The Jets have needs for improvements, in my opinion. Tight end, Cumberland. Cumberland can play. But you know what? Could they use somebody else who's also dynamic with Cumberland? Sure. I think their secondary is fine because Cromartie played terrible last year. Terrible. I think their secondary is just as good as it was last year. People say they were 22nd against the pass. Well, you know what? How about scoring more points, keeping your defense off the field, and bringing in a couple of young dynamic pass rushers to help, you know, stop that passing attack and help out that secondary. That's what I'm looking at. So I don't think the Jets have a lot of holes. I think the Jets have areas where they need some improvement, and I think John Idzik deserves at least the opportunity to get into September before we all start crucifying the guy, which a lot of people, not saying you, Joe, but a lot of people have done that. So, Joe, listen, we're going to wrap up because we do have another caller hold on the line. Thank you so much for calling into Jet Nation Radio, being a big supporter of ours, and I really do hope you enjoyed what Scott Wright had to say. He really is a fountain of information.
Yeah, this was a great show. I thought it was a great interview, man. Thank you guys again for having me on the show.
Joe, you take care. Talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye, buddy.
All right.
Well, a lot of interesting stuff there from Joe. Joe's you know, usually calls in as much as he can, and it's always great to hear from him. He has some great insight on the team. And Tyson, I'm going to bring another caller on now. We're starting to run long on time, but we do have time to take his call. It is Jude from North Carolina. I don't know what Jude wants to talk about specifically because, unfortunately, our switchboard operator, Scott, tonight has the night off. But, Jude, Dennis and Tyson here with Jet Nation Radio. I'm assuming you heard what Scott Wright had to say. Maybe want to touch in a little bit about what you think the Jets could – the way the Jets could go in the draft here?
Unfortunately, I just woke up from, like, a little nap. So when I woke up, I was near the end of the show.
Me too.
I just wanted to talk about – I actually had a question for him if he's on – because there was a lot of rumors and whatnot about the Jets potentially moving up to the number 8 draft spot for Sammy Watkins. But I know a bunch of people on Twitter were super advocates for that one with Pauline. I personally wouldn't do it. I was wondering if you think – if Sammy Watkins were to somehow drop to number 8, should the Jets move up or no?
I mean, if it's me, I'm saying no. And the reason why is just based on, I mean, Scott Wright went through a pretty in-depth explanation of the wide receiver class, the depth, the value you can get in the second round, the value you can get in the third round. I mean, I respect what Sammy Watkins brings to the table, but I don't want to give up the resources that need to move up to get him. So, you know, what basically Scott has me brainwashed now where I'm thinking, you know, corner in the first round and then getting wide receiver in the second round just based on the depth and the value that you can still get there. So I guess, Dennis, I'll ask you, but for me personally, I wouldn't trade up against Sammy Watkins. I mean, I respect the player, the ability, all that stuff, but for me, I don't want to give up resources to get him, and I think that you can get other value in the second round. What do you think, Dennis?
Yeah, well, I think first Sammy Watkins would have to fall 8, and I doubt that's going to happen. But, no, I just, you know, I hear what you're saying. You know, look, it's so tempting. Again, any prospect could end up being a bust. I think Sammy Watkins is going to probably end up being a great player. I think most people feel that way. But the Jets are really not in that position. I still think they need to restock the shelves some for this year and for the future. You know, it's very important for some of these guys, again, the guys that work out, maybe at first they kind of role players and they take a bigger role in the team as the season moves on. They get better. And I just think it's there's too many things going on. I talked about the inside linebacker position. Again, there's no depth there. You have Nick Ballore as your backup. So let's say you trade up, and now you don't get Christian Jones, and DeMario Davis gets hurt, and you don't, and Nick Ballore isn't really serviceable as the backup, but Christian Jones would be. So I just don't think the Jets are at that point. Look, when the Atlanta Falcons traded up for Julio Jones, they were kind of at that point. It worked out for them for a while, and then last year, obviously, they kind of paid the price a little bit, also had a lot of injuries. But it seemed to make sense for them to go up for Julio Jones. It doesn't make sense, I think, in my opinion, right now for the Jets to make that kind of a splash move. And I don't see Idzik. Again, it's John Idzik we're talking about here. He just doesn't seem like the type of guy. He looks at his board, says, you know what, I'm gonna just kind of sit here. I wouldn't be surprised if he moved up a hair here or there in the later rounds where it doesn't cost as much, but I would be very surprised if he had to give up the resources which it would take to move up to 8 to get Sammy Watkins if he was even available at 8. But, Tyce, you have something else you want to ask Jude?
Yeah, Jude, one of the things that came out of Scott Wright's interview was the overall depth of the running back class and that there's going to be value in rounds 1 through 7. He basically said if you want a playmaking running back, it doesn't really matter what round it is, you're going to find some kind of value there for your team. So based on that, what are your thoughts on Chris Johnson? I mean, looks like the average free agent running back is getting $3 million a year. You know, he may want a little bit more based on his history, things like that. You know, if there is significant, you know, depth in the draft class, what are your thoughts on Chris Johnson? How much would you offer him to come to the Jets?
That's really tricky. I mean, I wouldn't break the bank with him for one thing. I mean, if he demands too much money, all you have to do is just look at the draft class. You're probably going to get someone who can at least replicate a 1,000-yard season once 6 out of 8 years, for example, and just go ahead with them because, I mean, I heard punters and kickers are getting paid more than some running backs. So I wouldn't be terribly upset if we did not get Chris Johnson. If we got him, I would get him for a fair deal, $3 million a year, maybe half of that guaranteed. I don't know, $4 million guaranteed, say.
But now would you offer him any more than 2 years?
No.
Okay. Yeah, see, that's one of the things, like, it seems like, you know, like other players, I respect Chris Johnson brings the table. The Jets are in desperate need of a playmaking, you know, running back. He's explosive, he's fast, he's all these things. But it's like, at what point? I mean, you have 12 draft picks, there's value in the running back class. So I'm like you. I'm like, listen, you know what? 2-year deal, $3 million per, and it, take it or leave it. I mean, is it held around with other players like, you know, Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie? I do the same thing with Chris Johnson. I mean, Dennis, I'm not sure what your thoughts are, but I hold firm ground with Chris Johnson just based on what's available in the draft.
Well, let's take a look. Here's something I want to – let me ask a question to both of you, okay, before I get to the numbers, you know, numbers. If let's say J.J. Watt right now was released by the Houston Texans just because they needed the cap space. So, say, again, I know it's not going to happen, but let's just say he was released, boom. And he's on the open market. Now, he's going to cost you a lot. He plays in a 3-4 defense. You know, he's a very dynamic player. Should the Jets acquire him, I mean, and pay the money to get him?
Oh, well, with me, if J.J. Watt were to get released and if Rex really wants another defensive lineman, then I would seriously consider acquiring him, yes.
Well, forget about the quality. Well, I mean, you would seriously acquire him. Tyson, would you seriously acquire? Think about acquiring him?
Yeah, he's one of the best defensive players in football.
Okay, but how does he fit in the Jets' defense? I mean, who is he playing in place of?
Oh, okay, if you're going that avenue. Oh, yeah, I mean, you're saying, Dennis, if you use with a square peg and round hole right now, I swear I'm going to throw things.
No, my point is that while J.J. Watt, I mean, he is a great player, don't get me wrong, but does he fit with the Jets right now? Are you taking Sheldon Richardson off the field to put him in? And are you paying him all this money to replace Sheldon Richardson? Are you taking Mo Wilkerson off the field? I mean, how does he fit? How does he fit? I mean, it's not that he's not a great player, it's just that the Jets kind of don't need him, right? So does he really fit a role on the team? I mean, you'd have to get rid of somebody that's kind of pretty good. I mean, Sheldon Richardson's under contract, fair price. Mo Wilkerson, I know he's, you know, maybe next year going to get a deal, but they've been in the system, they've worked in the system. So does J.J. Watt fit now that I've kind of explained it? Would you want to rethink that, or are you still saying, just sign J.J. Watt, we'll find a way to get him out there on the field?
Well, fit is important. As you said, fit is important. So, yeah, I mean, I probably still would just go ahead and do it, but I understand your point.
Well, I guess my point is this, since you're all going to still go ahead and do it, is how does Chris Johnson really fit with the Jets? Now, Chris Johnson last year, he had a 3.9 average, okay? He's going on 29 this year, and that's, you know, that's kind of a dangerous age for running backs. You know, 29, 30 is when their careers generally end. He had 42 receptions, okay? And, I mean, is he your first back? Is he going to split carries with Ivory? What if Ivory's having one of those 200-yard days? Or is he going to catch the ball out of the backfield? Now, Bilal Powell had, out of the backfield. He had 36 catches last year, and I think Johnson had about 42 catches. Yeah, 42. So I mean, are you gonna look? Bilal Powell had a 4.0 average. Chris Johnson rushing had a 3.9 average. So I mean, combined, Bilal Powell and Chris Ivory for the most part the whole season was the Jets' running attack. I know Mike Goodson had two whole games where maybe he touched the ball 10 times, and Alex Green barely did nothing. And they were sixth in the league in rushing. I understand that, but you know, if you're going to pay Chris Johnson to come in there, I just don't know how you're going to really get the usage out of him. Now, look, if Chris Ivory wasn't there, you say, all right, Chris Johnson is our number one back, Bilal Powell is our backup, and whatever they have is the third guy. But right now, I think for a fit, you have Chris Ivory as your number one. I know he gets banged up once in a while, but Bilal Powell is more than a serviceable backup. He proved last year with his 4.0 carries. He had 700 yards rushing. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. And you go in the draft, and you get a guy who's the third string who touches the ball 5 to 10 times a game. And guess what? Bilal Powell is a free agent in 2015. That's going to be an issue, and it's going to be an issue because I don't know if the Jets are going to want to re-sign him. So now you have a guy who has a year of development behind him who you can plug in. And here's another thing. In 2015, Ivory will be going on year three of his three-year contract with the Jets. Most running backs' careers are about 3 years long. Ivory is a hard-nosed runner. I'm wondering if Ivory's going to run out of gas in 2015, if he's going to be able to be the number one guy. He gets hurt as it is. So here's what you're going to have to do. In 2015, you have to draft another running back, and you're going to have the rookie you have this year that's now a second-year player in 2015, Ivory, who might be the number two back, and then bring in another rookie. So that's my problem with signing Chris Johnson. It doesn't fit now, and it doesn't fit in the future.
Yeah,
I'm going to go with Jude and then Tyson.
Yeah, Jude.
Well, go ahead, Jude. You make a very good point, Dennis. I mean, I can't really argue with that right now.
Jude. Dude, you are calling Francesca and you're backing down the dentist? Are you kidding me?
Well, I mean, the only thing I can say, Chris Johnson wouldn't be a long-term investment, so even if we did sign him, it's not going to mess up our plans, so to speak.
Okay, Jude, I'm going to cover for you now. Dennis, here's the reason why people want Chris Johnson. I'm using this respect word a lot today for some reason. I'm not sure why. But anyway, Bilal Powell is a good running back. He surprised some people. He's durable. He's physical. He doesn't have game-breaking ability. So the argument for getting Chris Johnson – now, keep in mind, I'm not on the Chris Johnson bandwagon where I want him signed tomorrow. I mean, I can take him or leave him. But the thing is, you get him in open space, and he has the ability to take it to the house at any point. So, Marty Morningway can get very creative with him. If you have Ivory and Chris Johnson in the same backfield, I mean, it's going to cause matchup nightmares because Johnson's speed is dynamic. You get him in open space, a quick slant out of the backfield, anything, a quick pass, any little thing, he has the ability to take it to the house. That's something that Powell cannot do. So I think the argument.
But what about a draft pick? What about Dree Archer? Could Dree Archer take it to the house? He runs a 4.240. You see, Chris Johnson is no longer that 4.2 guy. Again, this is a running back who has mileage on him. His numbers have decreased each year for the most part since he signed that second contract. He's on his third contract. Who out there, tell me a GM, if you had any GM on the telephone right now, says, I want a running back on his third contract.
Hey, listen,
this is the problem.
I understand what you're saying, but, I mean, there's teams like the Raiders that are signing Jones-Drew. The thing is, if you bring in Chris Johnson,
there we go.
You're not bringing in Chris Johnson for 30 carries a game, and his salary should reflect that. If he's a 10 to 15 touch guy, you know, it's like, you know what, catch five passes here, do this, do that, and he's making $2 million here. It doesn't bother me because that's the ability to get explosive playmaking ability. You know, that's worth the money for me. But anything more than that, I mean, it's just kind of saying. I'm not bringing him to be a bell cow back. He's going to be a complimentary player to Ivory and Powell, all three. It's a good stable of running back. And if you add a fourth running back to the draft, fine. I mean, you can't have too many. So, I mean, you can't have too much talent in the backfield. It's always a good thing. And like you said, if Ivory gets hurt, Johnson steps up, Powell moves up, everybody moves up the line. So, I mean, I'm making a sales pitch for Chris Johnson just to be devil's advocate and because Jude was just sitting there scared of you.
I'm not Mike Francesa. I'm nice. I let Jude talk. I'm not Mike. I just don't hang up on him, right, Jude? Is that what Mike Francesa did to you? Just hung up on you?
The first time we talked for like 5 minutes, and then he hung up on me. The second time he hung up on me. I was shocked I talked with him 5 minutes the first time. It was apparently a record, but yeah.
Here's the thing, Tyson. I understand about Chris Johnson, the potential, and again, I'm worried about the age and that, you know, did he hit that wall? Because, you know, running backs hit that wall. Like LaDainian Tomlinson had a great year in 2010 and 2011, disappeared off the face of the earth. That's what I'm worried about. And, you know, is he going to be willing to be a 10 and 15 touch guy a game? That's another thing that I'm worried about. And I'm also worried about the next year, which is Ivory potentially breaking down, Powell going to free agency. And I'm not breaking the bank to bring back Powell. I mean, could you bring him back for a year? Sure. I just think that I want some young, fresh legs in there, a guy who knows his role, who's learning behind some veterans, and, you know, go from there. That's the route I would take, and I would say, you know, you want the dynamic playmaking ability, go in the draft, get a young guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield and give you those 5 to 10 touches a game, and let Powell and Ivory do what they did last year. That's my opinion. I hear what you're saying about Chris Johnson. I just hope that the Jets aren't making a decision to appease fans and people and say, look, we brought in a name. Again, it's a name. Chris Johnson, he had 2,000 yards rushing 5 years ago. You're not getting Chris Johnson from 5 years ago. You might get a guy who can give you some production. I just wonder if you get the same production in the draft, and then you have a guy who can have 3 or 4 years moving forward. Again, I want guys heading into their prime. Let me just ask you this quickly. Chris Johnson, you and you, Chris Johnson, is he heading into his prime, in his prime, heading out of his prime, or out of his prime? Jude first, then Tyson.
Well, I personally think he's still in it until he stops having 1,000-yard seasons, but that's just me.
Okay, Tyson?
Chris Johnson serves a purpose, Dennis. That's my answer.
Good waffle. Well, listen, Jude, we're going to have to wrap up. The show's actually starting to run short. We really appreciate you calling in. And you know what? Do us a favor. Listen back to the show. I know you were napping, but we had Scott Wright on from DraftCountdown.com. He went over the draft, soup to nuts. It was really great. I think you'll get a lot of enjoyment out of it. And we do appreciate you calling in the Jet Nation Radio tonight. And we'll talk to you soon. Okay, buddy?
Thank you very much. Have a good night.
All right, bye now. Yeah, look, I mean, it's not that I don't like Chris Johnson or don't think that Chris Johnson could be – I think that if, like if it was next year, let's say next year and the Jets decided to get rid of Powell, not bring him back, and they had Ivory, and they had, like, they were going to draft a rookie, then I would think Chris Johnson would be perfect because, okay, now you kind of have that slot for him. I mean, I just wonder if, you know, again, the fit. I worry kind of about the fit and does he fit that? Or, you know, I would even think, like, next year, let's say the Jets didn't bring in Chris Johnson. They had Ivory, Powell, and a rookie. And then next year they got rid of Powell, and they had Ivory and the second-year guy. And then they went out and got a veteran, a cheap veteran, a guy who was kind of on his last legs but could be a nice third option, could give you a start here or there or whatever. I could see that. That's kind of the way I look at it. But, you know, there are varying opinions on Chris Johnson. I guess my biggest concern is, again, does he hit that wall? Is he going to give you what you expect, the guy who catches the 2-yard pass, makes a guy miss, and runs for an 80-yard touchdown? My concern would be, can he still do that at age 29? You know, there's a little question mark there in my mind. So that's my concern. I think I'd have less of a question mark with a guy who's 22.
And see, and I respect that, but for me, it's like based on his salary, which should be significantly reasonable, I'm not worried about it.
Mm-hmm.
For $2 or $3 million a year, I'm willing to take that chance. I mean, Dennis, keep in mind, mm-hmm. I'm the guy that wanted Darren Sproles and Dexter McCluster. So, like, I'm looking for that dynamic back out of the backfield that can make plays. So, you know, mm-hmm. but for me, like, I understand what you're saying. I mean, there's some risk. There's some concerns about his ability. Is he slowing down? But based on the contract and based on the contract he should get, which should be very reasonable, I'm willing to take that risk. But if the Jets don't get him, I'm not going to cry tears over it. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, okay, he wants $5 million a year. Go to the Giants. Go to Broncos. Take care. We'll go to the draft. You know what I mean? But you can make a case for and against him. I mean, you know, I could take it or leave it, to be honest with you.
Well, I guess that's kind of the way I guess that's kind of the way I feel as well. I guess I'm always kind of the more cautious one, and it's just the way I think. I always kind of like the younger guy, gives you a little bit more going forward. Chris Johnson's kind of at the end of his career, but you know what? Look, we'll see what happens. It is going to come down to the price. Obviously, if he wants to be a feature back, the Jets is not the place for him to come. He's not going to get 20, 25 touches a game coming to the Jets with what they have right now. But listen, Tyson, what a great hour. I just want to thank Scott Wright from DraftCountdown.com for coming on the show, giving us such wonderful insight on the draft. He was absolutely terrific. I mean, you're not going to get that kind of insight on the Jets specifically in the draft anywhere else but here on Jet Nation Radio. I want to thank all the listeners, the downloads, all the emails, the tweets. We try to incorporate some of the email questions into some of the stuff we asked Scott Wright. So it really was just another great episode of Jet Nation Radio, Tyson.
Yeah, I mean, I want to thank Scott Wright as well. It was a great show, great information, and I really appreciate his insight.
All right, folks, for Tyson Rausch, this is Dennis Agapito. Jet Nation, we will see you next week at 8 o'clock.